start this the show. Welcome everyone who just hopped on.
I mean, this is a thing.
That is a thing. Not the best thing though. I prefer it not being a thing.
You tried to save it in your to your credit.
Yeah, I did.
And, another note.
You like sacrificed your firstborn for it publicly, and the gods were like, "Nah, it's okay. Don't worry. Yeah, we need more."
Like, I mean, what else do they need, dude? Yes. Everything going to zero. That's what they need, apparently.
Terrible.
Oh well, it's what it is.
I mean, I was memeing about this on the show. Remember that as far as fundamentals go, it's like, yeah, equities are bad and contagion, systemic risk stuff. But there's also consensus, and conferences are really bearish. You know, that's clearly the most.
That's all you really needed to know. The rest was just fluff.
Exactly. That was just window dressing, but the conference is the real bearish catalyst.
Yeah, I better not say the rest is just fluff. People think I'm talking about JPEGs.
How are fluffs doing anyway?
I have no idea.
So you sold everything?
Or no, I have no intention of selling what I have left until like they hit like a 1 year time frame, because I want the long term capital gains on them.
Yes, capital gains.
In that scenario, it actually makes sense because I took enough off the table for it to be fine. Anyway, I don't need to justify it any further. If you can just make fun of me asses.
Yeah. I mean, I learned my lesson. I'm never going to talk like shit talk your choices again. I was sitting there being like, these are so fucking ugly. And then they end up like, I don't know, like 20x or something after I said it.
They weren't doing bad last week, but that means nothing about what they're doing today. So. Mm-hmm. I can even show you guys, but I don't need to shill.
No, that's good.
She'll flip at the moment.
There's an echo? I don't hear an echo.
Yeah, floor's 2.7 ETH. They're doing great.
It's a real story.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually not that bad, yeah.
Yeah, the hard part is like 4 if sold in 24 hours, 5 if sold in 24 hours.
Nah. I mean, it's the same as with fucking Bored Ape Yacht Club, where it's like, I was like looking at it yesterday or the day before, and I was like, this is still way too high. And then it dropped by like 20 ETH or something in just one day.
Yeah, the Bored Apes are not doing well.
I mean, they're doing well comparatively, I guess, to everything. But yeah, just like in the last day or two, they've just been taking a beating.
Yeah. All right. Well, should we do the proper show?
Let's do the thing.
Cool, cool. Just set up a couple things here. Thanks for being here, everybody. Time to get going. Oh, hold on. I got to add one more thing. Naturally, I mean, you haven't been rugged enough today. Like ruggy for another 10 seconds. Okay. Now we got what we need. Right. 3, 2, 1. Hello and welcome to Weekly Open. I'm Brian here with Don and Cred. We're excited to have you here. We're excited to be partnered with FTX. Go to weeklyopen.com/FTX, where you can trade today. If you are ready to dollar cost average, then you can do it on FTX. Go to weeklyopen.com/FTX to do it. It's the best place to do it, right on the app. Super easy. Thanks to them for being our partners. Track your portfolio and stuff while you're at it. Let's get to the show. Fred, Don, how's it going?
Excellent. I mean, something is going, right?
Something is going. I'm doing well. Don has decided to choose violence and has put up a quarterly chart in money.
I mean, Cred kind of made me do it. He's like,
"Wait, we'll start blaming each other within the first few minutes of the show already."
I'm still blaming you, Don. You gave into the peer pressure.
I guess so. I mean, it's fucking hilarious how that just looks like the typical kind of bubble chart, but. Let's not talk about that.
Kind of hilarious. Depends on your version of humor.
Yeah.
I'm pretty good. I'm still in Austin for a couple of days before I leave to another part of the US to continue my fattening operation. The shred with cred reversal. I couldn't get a reversal from the market. So I thought I might as well
work on that
with my own life. Yeah.
Only it's our body weight.
Yes, exactly. I mean, you and I spoke about this. Like the conference itself was cool, and it's always like nice to meet people you've spent countless of hours talking markets with, etc. Especially given the job isn't inherently social if you're a independent trader type of setup. But the conference itself was like, as someone who spends 25 hours a day, 8 days a week on crypto Twitter, you kind of walk into this place, and I recognized maybe, I don't know, half at best, probably much less, like 20 to 40% of the names there. I was like, yeah, this, I've heard of this before, it makes sense. And everything else was just completely new, very sort of not frothy projects, but, you know, frothy projects. Like you're standing in the queue to collect your badge, and people completely, you know, oblivious, it seems, to broader market conditions and talking about like DAO tools and weird NFT derivative stuff. I didn't get the sense that it was some survivor mode kind of builder conference, and this is kind of who's left at the end of it vibe. That wasn't it. So, you know, it yeah. is what it is, I suppose.
I'm not quite sure what to make of that. And also, Don, not to brag, but, you know, Cred and I hung out in person, met in real life.
That photo is why the market's down. You know, we were smiling in that photo, so it's like clearly not enough pain going on.
The derivative photo was more fun, I thought, because each of our, you know, most terrible components and put them all together. But yeah, it was. I think with the element that you're talking about in terms of like people there were not acting down bad. I think it's generally the people that you see like in the conference hall, they're just repping booths and stuff. Like they're probably the lowest exposure people within their companies, you know, like maybe some of them were owners or whatever, but I just think that between that and you just put on a brave face and you work through it. But yeah, I don't think there was any kind of like doom and gloom type of talk or mentality. It was more like, how are we going to institutionalize the market, you know,
because that always goes super well, right? CME futures, ETF, those have been really bullish inflection points in the market historically. So more institutions equals good.
Yeah, I think when you get to the real stuff, though, like you start talking to funds about how they're approaching the market, or you talk to companies about how they're approaching the market from a fundraising perspective, or you know, like I think most responsible entities are preparing for some pretty severe pain, downside, contraction, sideways, whatever, you know, not up, not hype, like preparing for a potential economic downturn. The question I always have, even if you do prepare, I put myself in this exact same camp, because like, do you prepare well enough? And like, so for me, I'm have not, you know, like I stayed fairly exposed to this market. I did make some rotations, Cred, since we talked, which was good.
You're welcome.
But like, you know, can you prepare for how nasty it can get? And that's what's yet to be seen. So why don't we kind of get to what's causing this latest breakdown? I mean, I guess you can always come up with a fundamental reason why something must dump, but the news of the day is certainly the Celsius stuff. Are y'all following that closely?
Go on, Don. I know you love fundamentals.
Yeah, I mean, somewhat. I don't know how true it is or not. Like, the whole story just, I mean, it's the perfect moment to kind of hit everyone with FUD, right? And it does kind of make sense if you look at it, because I mean, Luna blowing up and just in general, like everything just being down bad would make sense. But I'm not entirely sure if it's actually true. Like the whole Celsius is fucked and all that kind of stuff. I'm not entirely sure if it's true. But we're going to find out, right? And that's going to be like, if it's actually true, we're going to have big problems. And if not, maybe we get a bounce. But even if it's not, I think it's like market's just kind of cooked right now.
Yeah. In terms of how, what's the opportunity for them to be bankrupt or like, are they under collateralized? Like they don't have the money to fulfill the redemptions. They're truly done. And so are their customers. Another is they have the money, but they like have to find liquidity for things because they allocated it very poorly, but they don't necessarily have the money to operate. So they wind down, but their customers get their money back. That's also possible. And then the other is they do have enough money to, you know, continue being a company, but they have enough for their customers. In that case, though, as soon as they open back up, then they'll no longer have customers. You know, so like Celsius yep. cooked no matter what. The question is whether their customers can be made whole and how quickly can they be made whole. So my hope is that their customers can end up being made whole. If some like maybe someone steps in and essentially provides them the like takes all the whatever collateral, whatever stuff that Celsius has. And then is it able to enable those customers to get made whole? I don't know. The part that stinks is people probably were still not taking their funds out of Celsius, or like Celsius wasn't processing them, and they're capable of repaying other loans or something that they had taken, and now they can't. And so Celsius freezing everything and not doing what they're supposed to do is now going to bankrupt these other people in other places. So that contagion effect right. is pretty nasty. And that doesn't just mean individuals, like that could be entities as well, right?
Yep.
I think just to kind of set the scene, so Celsius is like a crypto lending service. The basic premise is that you have crypto, you want to earn yield on just holding it, i.e. get more crypto for your crypto. So you give it to someone else, that someone else then leverages it or yield farms it themselves or undertakes, you know, economic operations with it to generate more yield with that pool of money. And from that pool of money, they pay you back more than you would have if you just kind of held your coins on, you know, off exchange or whatever, right? And what Celsius Network has done is that they've paused basically everything, right? Transfers, swaps, withdrawals, redemptions, etc. And so if you're a customer who had your crypto or has your crypto with that service, you don't have access to it right now, even if you wanted to sell it, move it, or do something else. I think my, you know, my friend Wassey Lawyer, he posted a useful, I mean, he's like a bankruptcy restructuring TradFi lawyer person. So he's been having fun, as you can imagine, with Terra and Celsius now. He makes a very useful distinction as to whether, you know, it's important to understand whether Celsius is cash flow insolvent or if it's balance sheet insolvent, right? Cash flow insolvent suggesting that they just can't meet the liquidity demands of their customers at the rate it's coming in at the moment, be it because their positions are not liquid, they can't unwind them quickly enough, they are staked elsewhere, like the speculation with staked ETH or something like that. And then the balance sheet insolvent is the slightly uglier one, where even if they were able to sell whatever collateral they have or whatever crypto they're holding, it'd be nowhere near enough to meet customer redemptions. And then there's also obviously, you know, interim stuff, which is what are they doing about it? Are they going to try to trade their way out of it? Are they going to try to add, use that collateral to add to positions that are at risk of being margin called? There's some speculation now as to, you know, there's a big, I think, WBTC loan, and they're adding collateral to that. It's a rough situation. Mm-hmm. But TLDR is you've got a lending service, customers can't get their money from that lending service, and it's not entirely clear what their economic health is. You can infer that it's not good because they paused withdrawals. Your best case scenario is just to buy themselves some more runtime, and it's kind of short-term liquidity concerns, and they're hoping that the market's going to stabilize and they can resume processing withdrawals to make their customers whole. The more crypto-likely scenario, obviously, is the uglier one, which is that, you know, more on the balance sheet insolvency type of thing. And, you know, as you mentioned, the contagion risk from that type of stuff, having to unwind these large positions, they get like liquidated on chain or even hunted for that on chain liquidation. It just all gets very cascady, and they have a lot of crypto, you know, so that's also a kind of future supply potentially.
And I mean, their liquidation was pretty close to like 21K earlier. Yes. And then they added collateral to kind of lower it down to, what was it, like 20K, I think?
It's like 18, I don't know. Yeah, something like
that. I don't know if they added again lower.
I heard that one will be safe. But also, everything they do there to add collateral, it also takes away from their ability, because they have, Kobe was tweeting that they have a bunch of money that's, not through like staked ETH, like Lido staked ETH, but it's like actually locked until the merge. So can't get that back unless a counterparty takes the private keys. But there's what counterparty wants to take the private keys if you know that Celsius also will still have access to those private keys, you know? So it seems that they are, at a minimum, to your point, Cred, at a minimum, cash flow insolvent.
Yes.
And the question, my personal gut would be that they were hitting close to the line of balance sheet insolvent, and that's when they pulled the plug on withdrawals. So now they need, like, now you've got people that are going to go in there and seek the discounts to make others whole while also taking over anything that Celsius may have, you know, like finding the delta there, right? Because they, you know, somebody that has enough liquidity and cash to work through all these issues and time might take advantage of that and then be able to hedge it out and essentially earn a delta neutral nude.
I'll send you one of those, mate, if you really want it.
A delta neutral position that, you know, squeezes back together over time as the merge comes and all that. I would have to imagine that people are trying to do that with Celsius.
Yeah, that seems reasonable. It just sucks, right? This is, I think there was some cope going on that perhaps the Luna fallout would be quite limited in scope, both from a market impact point of view and a, you know, regulatory enforcement point of view. And it seems that neither of those things are true.
Do we know yet if this is related to anything Luna? Because, I mean, they're definitely an entity that would have had UST exposure, right?
I don't think it's like anything public, but... And I don't know, like, I don't have any inside information, but I would be surprised if not, right? It would just make a lot of sense. If you're in the business of doing like yield stuff, there's a good chance that you were involved.
Yeah, and yields in general got wrecked, right? That kind of stuff just contracts that part of the market in general, even if you avoided the direct blow up exposure wise. So it's not great. And as TJ says in the chat, Nexo, to your point, Ledger, about someone coming in and acquiring what's left of their balance sheet, I think Nexo Finance even publicly tweeted that they were interested in having that conversation with them.
I feel for anybody that was using those services, that service in particular, thinking that their funds were liquid and able to get back to them, because you could have done everything supposedly right or quasi right and then still, you know, get screwed in it. So it really sucks.
Back as well, Savers getting wrecked. So UST is supposed to be like a risk off type of thing, and you park it in Anchor and you get more dollars to buy the dip with or to be out of the riskier crypto stuff. You get carried out. And then if you're just like, I guess, holding your crypto with Celsius and be it Bitcoin, ETH, stable coins, whatever, now you don't have access to that either, even if you're not actively speculating in the market. Because that's what both of those things are to some extent, right? It's people who don't want to have either direct exposure or they want to have limited speculation or just be more passive in the market. That's what those products, the type of audience those products are aimed for. And just to see them get carried out first is rough, you know?
Yeah, probably not the last that's going to, there's going to be trickle on stuff of a lot smaller entities doing the same thing that we don't even realize it's happening right now, but it's definitely also happening right now. All right, so that's the most news we've ever led with.
I know, look at us.
Don, do you want to kind of give us a lay of the land market structure-wise?
Mm-hmm, I can. I mean, what we've basically done, right? And we talked about this a lot, but it just took a while to play out. But we had a massive range in here, right? Sideways from 60 to 30K. We broke it last month, and I was like, why is this not nuking, right? This should be nuking, like, straight up the bat. Took a little bit, right? It took, like, a week or two after the close, and, like, in general, like, it was just pretty slow. But now it's full steam ahead. Range breakdown doesn't really seem to be, like, a false breakdown, right? Just given how strong this move really is. And high time frame, there's just not that much support. That's why this is so straight down. Because you look at this, right? You look at these candles here, and they're straight up, right? But what that also means is once you're on the way down, you have no support, like no technical structure that you can rely on to kind of catch the market. And so we're just going free falling, basically.
High time frame, then you're on the monthly right now?
Yeah, that's the monthly. So, I mean, next support on the monthly is 14K, right? So that's kind of rough. A little bit, I mean, you could argue 20K support, and I have something on the weekly for that, which is around like 18 to like lower 20K, 19 point something. But it's really shitty as well. The only kind of argument that you can make, I think, in this case, is that the all-time high is going to be support. The problem with that is you look at ETH, right? And that has done jack shit. Like, it's just like nothing. Just slice straight through. Doesn't have to mean that Bitcoin does the same thing, but it's obviously like, it's not the best sign in the world when you have like the second biggest crypto just completely nuke all technicals on that front, and then you pray to God that it holds for Bitcoin, right? But yeah, so TA wise, I don't really have good news, because the monthly is really, really bearish still. The weekly is really bearish. We had a bearish retest of the range, actually, the last 2 weeks. Retested 30K, now trading low 20Ks. And I'm not too convinced that that's going to be the low, right? Because so far, I mean, today feels a lot capitulatory. Like, a lot of people are just like completely coping about everything. And I'm starting to see like the bears just kind of going nuts again. But that hasn't helped so far, right? The bears went kind of crazy in this range, and all it did was produce a range, right? So so far, it's not like Bitcoin is down like 20 or 30% in a day. It's just 10% after 10% after 10%, which is not fast enough for me to think that we're finally capitulating, which is scary, right? Because when you're bleeding down like this, there's going to be like, most of the time, I'd say like 7 out of 10 times, but it's completely pulled out of my ass. But most of the time, there is going to be a capitulation of sorts, and then you swing back up, right? To kind of end this downtrend. Now, what Bitcoin and what a lot of altcoins and what ETH has done is basically walk down. And I mean, it's not really speeding up too much. This is not on log. So you look at this. It's speeding up a little now, but who knows how deep that can go on a wick, right? I could see this easily pierce through 18K on a wick. I just don't know where it's going to go. So for me, there's really not much to do other than waiting for supports to be hit and then seeing how they get hit, right? So if we continue to make 10% down days every day, I'm not going to get involved. If we get like a bigger nuke, which is like 20, 25% in a day, I could see myself just try to buy the dip. And I mean, even the low time frames, like the daily kind of, there's nothing there. There's just empty space everywhere. And the lower time frames, and we just broke the 4 hour range, retested it, right? So yeah. Like, yeah, the bearish retest there looks horrendous to me. I don't really see a point in getting involved, because at the end of the day, right, if this is the bottom and we're going to reverse out of it, if you want to be really, really aggressive, I would say you can actually wait for the range to be reclaimed here, right? And I know that you're going to miss out on like the first 20% in that case, but I don't want to get involved before a 20%, like before I mean, I can see this go 20% down tomorrow again. And that is more likely to me actually than this just full on running back into the range. If anything, I think if you take this range as resistance and this as support, you could kind of like do something like this where you just go sideways again in here, and that would be much more constructive than anything else. So you would have time in that instance, right? So either it nukes completely, dies, and I'm going to get involved. I'm going to try to buy like ETH and Bitcoin, especially on the more illiquid exchanges, way below where they're trading. So I'm looking for like wicks into like 400, 500 on illiquid exchanges for ETH, and then for Bitcoin, like into like 15, 16K maybe. If I don't get it, I have all the time in the world, I feel like. because yeah.
Like the reason we led with news and why it made sense to do so is because the technicals, unfortunately, have been very one-sided, but also just very straightforward for the longest time now, right? You have very high time frame breakdowns. Very high time frame breakdowns are bearish. In what cases are high time frame breakdowns bullish? Well, if the breakdowns fail, at least on some visible time frame, right? So you have a monthly breakdown. If you want to be an adventurer, you look on the weekly time frame for evidence of absorption if you want to like front run it, right? Or if you're very cavalier, you've got like a monthly breakdown. Maybe you even look on the daily time frame for some evidence of absorption or reclaim or move back into the range. But you need something to suggest that, the break of support isn't going to stick. And obviously, the higher the time frame, the slower the signal, but the higher probability of getting something clear. The lower the time frame, the faster the signal, and the higher likelihood of noise. But on any time frame, and Don, you know, looked at all of them basically, it's been very much the same story. Ever since the high time frame breakdown, there have been no reclaims, no absorption. And the closest thing we had was a weekly bearish retest onto the underside. Even just the most recent daily time frame example, the market went sideways for a month, and we've just broken down from that month-long range, right? Like, it is what it is. And I agree with that conclusion. If you get back above there, maybe there's a short-term play to be had, whatever. But we've been quite clear about this, that employing that type of reasoning exclusively is also a form of cope, right? Because the market just breaks support after support after support after support. And then you keep saying, well, if it reclaims, well, if it reclaims, well, if it reclaims, if it reclaims, you know? And like at a certain point, if it's not reclaiming, there's no point endlessly entertaining the counterfactual until such a time that it actually kicks into gear. And thus far, it hasn't kicked into gear. So, you know, that's why I think people are focusing on also news, fundamentals, etc., because there's no diverging technical case to be had to the upside, at least at the time of recording. And it's just been a pretty good signal to bear in mind for a while now, looking at these weekly charts. I mean, the weekly charts are also just phenomenally absurd at this point, right? Yep. Like looking at ETH weekly and Sol weekly, AVAX weekly, it's just dire. So yeah.
All right. Thank you both.
All right. See you next week.
And I mean that was Bitcoin. We can make it worse by looking at ETH if you guys want to.
Well, hold on. I got stuff to say.
Yeah.
Because there's one element of this that I think is at least relevant because I've talked about it for years. And that would be that the one kind of macro non-level to level thing that has worked for multiple bear markets is the 200-week moving average. And there are definitely market participants watching it. That's not to say that it'll be any kind of like bottom, but I do think it'll be a point where we end up having some degree of like congestion or maybe some buying post liquidation, that kind of thing. So for instance, we broke way below it with COVID liquidations. But we very quickly kind of fought back to it. Now that was a huge percent difference.
It's like 50%, right? From
Yeah. So it was 40% from the bottom of the. Yeah. So from 3880 back to 5500. But it's still like if you look at the weekly, you're like, oh yeah, that support held. But that's also like this is the one place where Bitcoin ever traded below it. So it's worth mentioning. It went 40% below it. It just didn't sustain it on a weekly. So that would be the type of example that you were talking about, Don, where you could get your levels, your 14 to 16K, 12K, 2K, whatever. If you then like pull back up to reclaim essentially these weekly moving average type of things, then sure, that could be like support. We could also see like pretty active buying of or DCA, spot-driven divergences from perps or like exchange by exchange differences in volume profile, depending on if it's retail or institutional or leveraged or whatever. It's just a place that is not, I give you, it's not like anywhere in terms of like a horizontal level. It's not clean, which is what makes me think that the likelihood is actually to what you said earlier, more like somewhere between 17 and 19.5 as a wick and then get back over the weekly. I think that would be a pretty bullish, you know, we don't wick to 12K type of thing. So without something existential to add to all the existential things we've already had, I think that the 200 week can still be supported, and it'll be interesting to see how the market responds to that. That's for Bitcoin. ETH is already there. ETH's hovering on it right now. It spiked below it temporarily. It's also slightly below its prior all-time high on the weekly. But what's nasty is, like, there was no real buying there, right? You have to go to a 5-minute, like, find the 200 week mega buying. It was 20 minutes worth. And so that's a picture of something that looks like it just wants to nuke below that important level. And then you find out later is now you're setting essentially a new regime like we had for 2 years of being below where it would have been, right? Like it didn't exist until 2020, but we obviously had a nuke in ETH in the bear market that was below any kind of long-term moving average that it could have possibly had. And I think that's the threat here, is that your new regime is not using that as support, but does it become like a big resistance if you end up in the, you know, 400? You end up 400 to 700 or something like that. Well, now you're looking at 200 week as this major resistance to recapture, and probably doesn't happen until you resume a bull market. So it's simultaneously, in my book, still a live support. Mm-hmm. And also we're sitting down 12% on the day without a lot of buyers stepping in as legacy markets open. We have no idea what's going to happen in legacy markets. It looks like in all time frames, everything's to keep going down. So you're like, you're still kind of in the wood chipper as you approach and break through these levels. And it doesn't look like anywhere that, like, it doesn't look like people are trying to step in basically. Yeah. So that makes the levels much less comfy. I still believe in those things as important levels, but it's important in the sense of what happens as you approach them. Know what that means in terms of what will happen, but that's kind of my take on it. ETH BTC, for what it's worth, the 200 weeks at 0.04. So a scenario that you could imagine is ETH does break below it, Bitcoin may hold it to some degree, and then you get your 0.04 move to the same thing. So that's my most important level on all markets, all time frames. So that's my 5 or 10 minutes on it.
No, I actually like it. I think in general, because people have been like, you've said like this and that level could bounce. Whenever you're hitting these levels, right? Like Ledger said, you can undercut them by quite a significant margin, especially if they're high time frame levels. Because I mean, a weekly candle can be 40% to the downside, and it can also be 50% to the upside, right? So whenever you're hitting these kind of levels, you kind of have to figure out, okay, how is the market set up? Like, is there a chance that this cascades and then maybe gets bought back up afterwards? Or are we already cascading into the level so I can actually buy the level straight up because the cascade is already happening? Now, ETH is down a shitload on the day, right? I mean, it's 15%. So that looks much, much like that's already quite a bit. But is there a world in which we kind of like go down another 15-20% tomorrow, have like a big, big red weekly candle that then gets bought up in the following days? I could see that be the case. That's why I'm saying, like, I'm not saying, okay, we're going to trade at 400 for ETH, right? This is just going to be like, okay, this is going to 400 and going to go sideways and then come back up. No, I just think there is a chance, and I said illiquid exchanges for a reason, because I don't think we're going, like, on Coinbase, I don't think we're going to 400 anytime soon. I think there's more chance that you're going to like 800 for like a week and then come back up. So I think, like, in general, like, this is an interesting area, right? It's also like we're approaching, for ETH, you're approaching support. That's like 800 to 1,000. The question is, do you buy 1,000 or do you buy 800? Because there's a big difference there, right? This is a massive kind of area. If you're buying 1,000 or 1,100, you're losing 25% if it kind of bounces, or if it goes all the way down to 800. And then the question is, can you hold it? Can you not? All that kind of stuff. So my kind of gut feeling, and this is why I'm so defensive, is that we're set up for a liquidation event, like a cascade, whatever. And it kind of feels like the people that usually bail us out of this are actually the people selling this time around.
Or letting it roll.
Yeah.
Like they see it coming. They don't want to step in front of the moving bus. And they're just going to wait it out.
I don't want to be that guy, right? I don't have to get in front of this thing when the other big guys are just like, fuck no. It's like, why would I do it then?
Service.
No, I just get rolled over and kind of like, that's the thing, right? You kind of have, it has to go so low that everyone feels comfortable enough to be like, okay, this is down so much that we can buy together and actually form a bottom, instead of, okay, if I buy now, I'm going to be a forced seller at 17K. I don't want to be that guy.
I think we should bring up one more thing that is definitely creating additional headwinds for all of crypto and basically any asset. And that's that legacy continues to just absolutely turbo puke. Down 3.5% on the S&P, 4% on the NASDAQ, more than 4.5% on the Russell, and quickly approaching its own 200-week moving average. So, like, if we're at it for crypto and we're about to touch it in legacy, I mean, you might as well go to the most big liquid market and use that as your point of potential support. Worth bringing up, when we had full on recessions, it was not like support for long. The 2001 recession, we spent a year. No, oh my gosh, that's like lots of years. We spent 163 weeks below it on the S&P, below the 200-week moving average, which I'm talking about here.
And oh, wait, that's the weekly. Oh, Jesus.
Weekly 200. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
Then on the 2008 recession, 125 weeks, and then retested it again. So another 165 weeks. So that's another 3 years basically below the 200-week moving average. We are not yet to the 200-week moving average from a contextual perspective. So if we go full recession, which almost every macro person in the entire world that I listen to, which I don't know if that means like fade them, they're wrong, or it's like so obvious that, you know, you just realize the whole market has to reprice. And the Fed is basically telling us we want a recession because we prefer the recession to inflation. So the room for down is high when we aren't even to the 200-week moving average. And in the prior two recessions, we spent a lot of time below it. The 200, those types of things are like basically what is your trend, and that is your trend support. But if you're a recession, is that your trend regime is changed, like you are in a different environment. So that's what is worth being careful of. In COVID, we spent time below it, and then quickly bought up back to it and beyond. This is to support your downside arguments on crypto. This all has to basically be supported within the macro trend in order for crypto to have the positive cases that you're talking about, in my personal opinion. If these break down in a bad, bad, bad way, retrace back, you know, many years of gains like prior recessions did, then like COVID lows are your S&P targets, in my opinion. And that is not what anyone... you know, so that's 25% to the 200-week moving average and like 50% drawdowns in a full recession. And I think that's very possible in the stock market if we go full recession. And I think if we're in a full recession, then we're actually in it right now and we just won't all admit it for like a few months, you know, because that's usually how that happens. It takes a while for people to actually admit that you're in a recession, and then it's been obvious that you've been in one for quite some time. There's a lot of macro stuff that aligns to saying that we're in one at the moment, like housing starts and some of these things that are highly leading indicators. Stores like Walmart and Target are getting clobbered on their stocks because they went from no supply to supply glut, because as they're catching up, there's no more demand. You can point to oil being, every time oil has mooned, it resulted in such a lack of buying power that there were recessions on the tail end of that. for example, this is 2008. It was when oil went to $140. And then at the end of the recession, it went down to 33. So there's very few things from a macro perspective. Oh, and the Dixies like turbo mooning through the green box that we've talked about many times. So I know people were thinking I was going to come in with the maybe bullish arguments, but all the macro stuff is very nasty. I don't know the answers to those, but yeah, that's
there's one thing worth noting about the 200 week crypto stuff is that there doesn't seem to be much of a cost if you wait for a weekly close and that kind of stabilization week, if it is going to be macro bottom or trend support or whatever else. And you get two benefits that way. One is that you get to trade around the level itself, even if there's a wick that goes significantly below it, and you don't reach that terrible, well, at the time, terrifying scenario where you're buying your macro giga trend support, then you eat shit for 30%, like immediately or in the same week. Like in hindsight, it looks obvious, but from a trade management point of view, if you're giga buying your all or nothing level and you're down 30% intra week, what's the likelihood that you have hands strong enough to hold that and not, you know, fumble the position, even if structurally you end up being correct? Whereas if you wait for the kind of stabilizing weekly close or reclaim or whatever else at that 200 week moving average, yes, you don't get the exact bottom, but there's a good chance that A, you have a clearer invalidation, like you know where you're wrong, which is usually around the weekly candle, which absorbed all that selling. And then you also have a ton more mental capital to work with, because you didn't have to stomach a 30% drawdown in an area which for you is, you know, very important for the market. And I guess the tertiary point is this hasn't been the type of trend, even if you're playing counter trend bounces, which I mean, none of them are visible anyway. It hasn't been rewarding participants who have been early to levels, right? It just hasn't been one of those. Sometimes you do get them. On this occasion, that doesn't seem to be the case. So the benefit of running ahead of these levels, at least from the available evidence, isn't all too good. So I still think it's important to keep tabs on the 200 week, both from a, you know, macro and also crypto perspective, if not at the very least to just avoid the whole thing of you have a support level you want to buy, the market gets to the support level you want to buy, you no longer want to buy it, right? That's like the classic trap of moving your targets on the way down as the market moves lower and moving your targets on the way up as the market moves higher. So I'm very sympathetic to 200 week moving average, you know, crypto bounces or congestion or whatever you want to call them. I just think there's no harm in waiting for a weekly close or something constructive around that time frame in order to make the case for a counter trend bounce. And even something like, you know, you close below the 200 week and then you get a very impressive spring or reclaim in the next 1 or 2 weeks, that would be a pretty cool counter trend setup. And it would be an equivalent failed breakdown thing that, you know, that has avoided the market thus far. Just you get it on a higher time frame trend proxy instead of a horizontal level. So close below 200, close above it, awesome. Deep wick through 200 and then stabilize around it, awesome. I think all of those, at least to me, are superior to knife catching through the 200, unless you're getting like very, very, very discounted entries, forced selling type of stuff. And at that point, it's almost a different trade where you think you're buying the weekly wick around the 200 and you're targeting the reversion. But in any case, I don't think there are, but you know, huge prizes for stepping ahead of it. And I also think if you are going to trade through the level, you better be getting a damn good discount. So wait for the market to prove that it's support, which you'll get in the next 1 to 3 weeks, depending on how it develops. Or if it starts turbo nuking through it, you better be sure you're getting a Don style discount wick, because otherwise, if you're neither here nor there, you're doing business in the middle of nowhere.
And for what it's worth, like every touch of it has actually supported what you just said. Like the last one spiked through, the one before it retested. And also, was it capitulatory at the point it touched, or was that the exhaustion? The capitulation was actually above it like a few weeks before, you know? And then the longest one and the most difficult, if you were trying to trade this now, I think there was a hack in this environment, but like ground on it for weeks.
You know, so you'll get a chance to trade around that level, right? That's the point. It's very unlikely to be like a quick tap and then it disappears into a new uptrend forever. If it is going to be an inflection point, you're going to be able to trade it very, very likely.
Yeah. So unless that level is coinciding with massive capitulation, then you don't have to rush to it.
Right.
The trade that you were just highlighting, and then the level itself. If they coincide, then yes. That's worth clarifying, because I've talked about for a year and a half about how that's the level I'm most interested in. So now you just have to sit here and see what happens, but I still will watch it very closely.
And something that I've seen in the chat is like people talking about like you or I changing our minds. And the thing is, like, in trading, right, how you look at this stuff just depends on if there's actually people buying it, right? Because if you're only looking at the levels, right, not how price gets to the level, you might as well just set the bid and walk away. And I mean, for a lot of people, that's actually a fine strategy to do. But I think, like, if you're trading full time, you kind of have to do a little bit more than that. And for me, that means I'm just looking at how price gets to a level and how it interacts with the level. And so far, I'm not seeing what I want to see. So that's why I'm, just saying, take your time, take it easy.
Somebody in the chat asked earlier, where is our capitulation volume? And I thought that was actually a good point as well. We are hitting equal highs of the prior, like the May 14th, 15th volume on FTX, but we're not even close on Coinbase. And like on the aggregate, the volume is not, not caught up. So we're actually not seeing good evidence of like capitulatory volume yet. Just as an adder.
Oof. Yeah. I mean, the thing is, like, even if you snipe the Pico Schmico turbo bottom on like an intraday basis and you get like a 20, 30, 40% rally off of it, almost all of the evidence suggests that there's a very high likelihood that the market will retrade very close or around if it is the macro bottom, right? That's always something to bear in mind. Being able to kind of observe the where that takes place is important, but being able to catch it is far less important, because the markets become so broken and disjointed and dislocated and illiquid and whatever else at those absolute extremes that very often you'll get a retest, or as you said, more congestion or a wick backfill or whatever else around those same levels. Some of the worst trades you can take are actually after, like, post capitulation, after the 20, 30, 40% bounce, like trying to chase that or using that to establish your position on like a short to mid time frame. Because volatility tends to contract, liquidity is also contracted. You don't adjust your trading size for the new prices and new environment, and you just get completely carried out. So as counterintuitive as it may seem, unless you're doing like very low time frame specific stuff, there's really no rush in order to trade very close to where the bottom might be when and if it happens.
On the question about recession earlier, Lakshay in the chat made a good comment just saying that they have to wait for 2 quarters of negative GDP anyway, in terms of like saying it's officially a recession, but markets front run that for sure. So I guess that's part of it, but not very many people will say like, hey, yeah, we're in a recession right now. But if we are in a recession, like technically you'd have to wait 6 months, which is useless from a trading perspective, in order to say, oh yeah, by the way, we're in a recession.
Yeah. It's the same with the bear market thing, right? Where it's like, yeah, you're going to kind of finally admit that it's a bear market after the market has just been down only for so long. It's like, what's the point?
Right. What else is on y'all's minds?
I mean, we can talk about altcoins, but really there's only Carnage.
So there's one
Solana
thing.
Solana is hilarious, actually. But yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to bring up the Scoopy range that we drew ages ago. This would be the bottom of that range. And people at the time were like, ah, screw you. Like, it's not good. That was up here, like $80 or whenever it's breaking down below that level. So I think the interesting thing here is not so much to say we were right. It's just to say like that's the speed that we've had here. I mean, Solana's 11 weeks since that dead cat bounce, and down over 80%. And it was it was 50% off its highs from there. So, and Solana is like the best example of all. So, but it's down 90% off its highs. So if you were one, look at the volume on the way up, that's where all the volume existed, is up towards the top. So if you're one of those market participants, you're down horrendous already. And then the question is, does this level make sense in context of everything else we just said? It probably does not. It like that was the target. And now, of course, we're talking about whether or not you change the target. If you look relative to ETH, BTC, whatever, it's actually it was down so bad. Now that ETH and BTC are down so bad, it's actually outperforming mildly on the day. I don't think if the downside cases that we were talking about on ETH and BTC, if they happen, that any of these alts will hold these levels that we're talking about. What do you think?
You can always buy their reclaimed range breakdowns later anyway, right? Like as per Don's example, even if that squiggly doesn't play out and I'm just looking at the green box where the market is right now, if weakness in the majors or a, you know, acceleration event in the majors takes that below that range low, then you have another weekly range breakdown in Sol USD, and then you simply not adjust the argument, but you simply reassess the evidence and say, look, it's another weekly time frame breakdown. I'm either going to buy it at basically Sam's level, you know, sell me all you want and fuck off or whatever, or roughly around there. Or if the weekly range breakdown fails and that happens in tandem with the majors bouncing, that becomes a setup in and of itself. Like for me personally, and especially because I'm like traveling around and stuff and my access is somewhat limited anyway, although I do have it, I'm not terribly interested in knife catching any of this type of stuff, because I know even, you know, if I miss the bottom, I don't care. And what looks like a bottom will probably be more obvious than the price action we've had now if it's a true capitulatory event. And then I know with a decently high likelihood that if that was it, even if it's just the kind of interim that was it, there's a good chance that we trade close to the wick, close to the lows. I get 1 or 2 weeks of low volatility, congestion, whatever, and then I can make that type of decision. If you're actively waiting to punt or trade this right now, I think the only real argument for doing so would be, I mean, obviously managing existing positions, sure, but it's to catch the kind of illiquid, crazy, wick, extreme kind of Don scenario. That's what should be keeping you glued to your screens. And that, I think it's the only justifiable setup. Otherwise, if you're kind of waiting, well, I want to be there roughly-ish for the bottom, you don't need to catch it first time around in order to get a really good entry. And if anything, trading too much around those points or being early or whatever else, that'll just zap your actual capital and mental capital before the important stuff happens.
If we just zoom in on the daily on Solana, and it doesn't matter. I mean, people get mad at us sometimes for talking about Solana in particular. So screw it. Here's AVAX. Same thing. I don't even know what the prices are. It doesn't matter. Point is, you get these escalating, like slightly larger daily candles, some buyback, and then that fails. And then that's what starts the big, big, big candle. And we're showing a repeat of that 1, 2, 3, 4 days, like slightly larger candles. And if you get this, some kind of buyback in here, and that fails, then that sets you up for like the, oh, it was 15 and now it's like 8, and you get 50% in a day or 2 days or something like that. That's your capitulatory candle if you really are seeking it. As much as this is aggressive selling and it could end up bouncing or going sideways or whatever in the case of the rest of the market doing so, these aren't yet capitulatory candles even on these. And that's what makes all this even more terrifying.
Don, did you see that Sue deleted the altcoins from his bio? It's probably not indicative of anything. Maybe it's just some housekeeping, but the market definitely, at least the Twitter participants had fun with that.
Yeah, I mean, honestly,
just a misclick, like, right?
Yeah, looking at all of this, I mean, I delete them too, not gonna lie. It's like, the scary part about all of this is, right, and this could be bottom things, me fighting the bottom, whatever, but a lot of this stuff is just now starting to break down and retest, right? So for example, Link, and this is something like a few of mine in a stream that I did asked me when Link was rallying last week, whether like this was the final turnaround point because Link had staking and blah, 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 right? And I was like, yeah, I mean, maybe it's bullish. I don't think it is. I think it's a bearish retest. We're running into resistance, right? But I mean, that's what it did, right? It retested that and just fucked off. And now, like, you look at it and where does it go from here? Because this is the most important structure and you just put in like a bearish retest on the weekly. And given how the macro situation looks, I don't know how to sell anyone an altcoin when you're like in a global recession, which I feel like we could be getting into. Like, I'm kind of on board with Ledger there. So it's like, how the fuck are you going to tell someone to buy AVAX from you or Link or Solana if everything is going to shit, right? Like, I mean, it's just really, really tough sell. And I think at that point, you're more likely to be able to get people to buy Bitcoin rather than the altcoins. And I think we're so deep now in the bear market that, yeah, you're going to get bigger bounces on the altcoins, but I think they're going to get heavily sold into because people kind of starting to realize now, now that they're down 90% of the altcoins, that they've kind of made a mistake in their portfolio management and they're going to be happy to exit, right? So I don't think it's going to be necessarily a quick turnaround. I think if you're going to get bounces on the altcoins, they're going to be temporary at best.
It's great low time trades to be had, but like,
yes,
long time frame stuff, you have much more time to be patient.
Yeah, I think that it's going to take like half a year to a year minimum for these things to turn around, even if Bitcoin kind of chills. Like if Bitcoin chills, goes sideways, I could see like some of the altcoins double and then retrace back down and then double again, whatever, have some volatility. But when the markets get this bad, and I mean, you can just look at stuff that has been around last bull market. I mean, I hate to go to Litecoin, but whatever. That was like it. I mean, that didn't actually pump. We need something that pumped. Do you have a good example?
For the something that lasted a cycle?
And then came back a little bit at least.
Tron-ish?
Yeah, I was just about to look at Tron, actually.
Or ADA.
Yeah, ADA is actually good. ADA is probably better, actually, because TRX didn't really do anything either. Like, ADA did quite well, right? This bull market. But you saw, like, it topped, and then it ran down, and then it went sideways for ages against Bitcoin, right? Like, this is legitimately, like, I mean, this is a year or 2 years of sideways, right? So if you're expecting your altcoin to just V-bottom and then just start outperforming Bitcoin again, I'm not entirely sure if that's going to happen. Like, I'd be very, very surprised. So, like, on the altcoin kind of front, the market just kind of cooked. Like, when stuff goes down 90%, it just takes a while to recover. And I think you're probably, like, for the stuff that is going to stick around, you're going to see something like this. There's going to be a lot of stuff that is not going to stick around. And I just wish you guys the best. May you have picked wisely, I guess.
I think you can actually explain some of that too, in the sense of you pretty much have an entire community reset as well. Whereas all but the original or most hardcore supporters have to turn over. So it's like new people that are like, okay, this is an interesting place. I need to get involved here. Every time I change the window, I have to, I got to put our picture somewhere else because everything's down into our little picture in picture things. You can't look at it.
Our pictures are the support.
Yeah. So you have to have essentially a complete reset of the community. The direction of the projects, many will dissolve, run out of money, whatever other kind of things that can go bad. And that's why some never come back. But even the ones that do, there's a lot of repair that has to be done in the process. And I think that's what is reflective of your comments there about why it's spent so long in the sideways realm.
Yep. And I mean, it sucks to hear, right? And I mean, we all want to talk about like the bear market being over soon. I don't think that's going to be the case. I legitimately think even if we capitulate here, right? And even if we go to like 17, 18K, I still don't think we're going to go straight back into the bull market after. Like, even if this capitulates, I think you're going to get like a big bounce. Maybe you're going to go back to like 28, 30K-ish. And at that point, I think it's going to be sideways again. Even if that's the bottom, after this capitulates, wherever that's going to be, I think there's a good chance that we're still going to go sideways for a year or so before we actually start heading back up.
Yeah, cycle resets are a product of time as much as price, right? So you kind of need both in most cases. The bullish hopium sort of, I mean, whenever I say bullish opium, it ends up turning into negative things, as Don knows. But I do have something, which is that one of the arguments, I think it's very reasonable, but also very applicable to altcoins that people make as far as where we are, is that, you know, if gas is expensive and the economy sucks and there's a recession and debt is expensive to service and there are no disposable incomes, etc., retail is basically locked out of crypto, where you don't have those marginal buyers coming in to speculate on your Ponzi garbage if they can't afford day-to-day life. And I think that's true. It's compelling. But I also think that the market can bottom as far as BTC and ETH go without a large amount of retail participation or retail buying or having a ton of capital to throw at the space. And often there's a lag to when the majors actually bottom and the retail is still completely dead at that point and there's no one left. And then as the market recovers, and very much and very often the case, multiples up from the bottom, that's when retail starts to get involved with higher beta, lower market cap, whatever type of shit coins. But that's multiples off, you know, multiples after Bitcoin and ETH have already done their thing, right? So if you're waiting for retail participation to be the harbinger of sort of BTC and ETH have bottomed, I think maybe somewhat mercifully, that doesn't need to be the case, at least historically, for the big boys to be done selling. And then retail always comes later once those bottoms are kind of well and truly formed. So some hopium there, maybe. You don't need to wait for like a full 180 macro economy reversal for BTC and ETH to stop going to zero, in my opinion, at least.
Yeah, I completely agree. I was actually trying to look for a chart that can assist with showing how patient you have to be sometimes with cycles. This chart is not perfect, but it'll do. And it's actually of silver, but you can do similar stuff with other things that have had long market cycles and how long the repair takes. Uranium is one, struggled to find the chart that I wanted. But this is silver, so it had a huge run up in the 70s. Huge. But then as it, you know, falls out of that, the amount of time that it takes to just repair the whole thing, it literally didn't go back to those highs until 2011, on a dollar basis, which is nuts. So in terms of... And behind silver, there's silver miners, like there's silver industry and production and things. And uranium went through the same thing. Like the cost, miners, producers of uranium basically just refused to do anything because the spot uranium price was too low for them to care or bother. That's the type of stuff where you have massive repair timelines that there's legitimately no rush to get out of, or rush to do anything. Oil's kind of been in the same thing, where new oil production has been demotivating because, you know, you had to have, say, $65 oil to do certain types of oil exploration or development. So there was this huge lag in development, and then combined with price recovery, that's what led to this, in part, to the spike in oil prices, is there simply wasn't enough supply. So that can set up some of your bullish catalysts. On the other side of it is the producers in that economy or that thing, as the cycle finally starts to repair, the producers are not prepared for the recovery. But that can take years. Not to get everybody excited.
Yeah, but very valid point. I mean, we're probably going to be faster than any of those, just crypto, but sure. It makes a lot of sense to talk about it because, like we've mentioned a couple of times, people just expect this to be a reverse and then just run up. And I mean, we've had that during the COVID crash, but it's very much not a normal thing. That is like the exception.
And we have before, like this, this period back here was minor capitulation. That's what created the bottom. And now miners were going out of business throughout the 6K stuff, the weaker miners. But then they're like some, Bitmain or whoever, like somebody was finally dumping stuff or protecting themselves, or, you know, we spent too long at a loss. And that's what created the cascade bottom. The only challenge here is like we did that while the economy was overall fairly healthy. Showing some ripples of discontent maybe, but obviously since 2018 we've done pretty well. So crypto has already done this multiple times, like miners shutting off, hash rate decreasing, that those are more bullish than bearish, even though they're very, very bearish in the absolute moment. So I don't think we've had any of that yet. Like, I don't think many miners are losing money yet at the moment, like maybe some of the weakest ones. We're definitely in the miners losing money territory when you get into the levels Don was talking about earlier. All right. Should we leave it there?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we haven't said anything like too unreasonable, I feel like, especially if you're tuning in for technical oriented stuff. I think there's some good stuff around the 200 weekly. The TLDR is, it's still important. If you're buying it first time around, you better be getting a damn good discount, or you're buying it 1 or 2 weeks later when it's clear it's done its job. So that's probably the most pertinent kind of market commentary as far as medium term trend stuff goes. The slightly zoomed out stuff is still the same as it was the week before and the week before that and the week before that, which is you've got a high time frame breakdown. That's a serious signal. You can start counter trend buying it if it gets just cheap enough. We're talking like Don level cheap enough, or if those breakdowns start to shift their behavior. And as we've seen with the most weekly charts ever, shift of behavior means you have a breakdown that doesn't stick and gets absorbed and trades back within the range. So those are probably those are two things that I'm still keeping tabs on as far as market structure goes.
Cred, what was the thing you whispered in my ear about, like, the position of power or something? I forgot it. Yeah.
Well, out of the many things I whispered in your ear when we met in person. Yeah, it's like the same old things, right? Like, I talked to Don about this, that when you're looking at fractals and past performance and whatever else, they work as a risk management reminder more so than a determinant. You know, they didn't determine what's going to happen. They plant a seed in the back of your mind that this might happen, but it's only important insofar as not marrying it as a target, but rather not blowing up if it does take place. Be that percentage declines or kind of wicks or whatever else, they're not deterministic, but they should inform your judgment as to what might happen. And it's your job then to make sure that if it does, you don't blow up. And a good time to consider that as ever, because some bigger players clearly haven't.
Yeah, don't put yourself in a position where you lack control of your future.
Yes.
If you're leveraged, that's what you're doing if you don't manage that. So, Don, any closing thoughts?
I mean, I would kind of encourage everyone to look out for like big liquidations or some service breaking. I mean, Celsius is, pretty big, so that might be enough, but I want to see it completely unwind. If that kind of stuff happens, it's usually close to the bottom. I mean, if people start selling Tether again, maybe, I don't know. That's the kind of stuff that I'm looking for, like crypto stuff breaking, because we're at the price levels where I think stuff could start breaking. And if it does, you usually get like a big, big candle to the downside, which stays in for at least a little bit. I mean, the last time we had it, we put in a candle and we traded a month above it. I mean, I was like bullish in this time frame for a little bit of it, and then it didn't move like I wanted to, and I sold, right? And I'm just gonna do the same exact thing again. I wait for something to kind of give me a good entry, like back then, and if it doesn't move the way I wanted to, I'm just gonna sell and just do the same thing another level lower. And I'll continue doing that until we actually find the bottom. And even, I mean, I didn't lose money the last time I did it, but even if I do lose like a percent or two every single time I do it, that puts me in a position that if we finally put in a bottom, I'm going to have a position and I don't have to kind of chase it upwards. And if we don't bottom, I'm nimble enough to jump out and just kind of get back in on a lower level. And I hope we fudded it into a bottom this time around. But
we've been saying that for months, right?
Legitimately, yes. Yeah, so that's been the story, actually. Like us like being bearish and being like, but maybe we've been so bearish, it's the bottom, and we're fucking down 50-60% since then.
Yeah. All right, we'll leave it there. Thanks so much, everybody, for being here with us. We appreciate you joining us on Weekly Open. We'll try to be here every week for you, even if the market's not. Go to weeklyopen.com/FTX. You can trade there. DCA in, DCA out, whatever you got to do, track your losses. You can do it all on the FTX app. It's the best way to do it. Be prepared for the next cycle. Weeklyopen.com/FTX. Thanks to them for being our partners. We'll catch you later. Bye-bye.